Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Monday, May the 13th. As we like to do on Mondays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into with Bill. I want to talk a little bit today about some of these campus protests and the fact that there's now a report that they may have trained. Some of these groups may have actually trained in Cuba. There's a great story at American Thinker by Monica Showalter talking about that. And then, of course, the whole controversy about Biden and what he said to CNN about Israel, some of these graduation situations where it seems like most of the students don't leave, but the ones who leave are small numbers, but they sure get a lot of publicity. So lots to get into with Bill. Bill, hello. I hope everything is going well with you.
Well, yes, it's personally it's pretty well in terms of the country, not so well in terms of New York City, which we are near very badly. In terms of New York State, a disaster. So it's kind of a mixed record.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. You talk about New York City, and I thought it was interesting that the mayor went to see the Pope. I thought that was kind of an interesting visit. He said he went to see the Pope to get some advice on immigration. I think that's what it was. That's a bit unusual. I didn't even know that Mayor Adams was a Catholic, Bill.
I didn't either. He never mentions religion. I thought it was okay for him to go and show respect. Nothing wrong there. I think the problem with Mayor Adams is that Mayor Adams doesn't really have any power. The mayor of New York is backed up by the state legislature. It's the state legislature that controls the money, and the City Council of New York, which is a very far left body, is almost independent. The City Council is not necessarily on the mayor's side, even though the mayor is a Democrat also, because the City Council is so far to the left that they'd abolish the police in 2 seconds if they had the power to do so. So the mayor is in a very bad position. The city is declining. There is no recovery in sight. The state of New York is now the largest out-migration state in the United States. More people leave New York than any other state. And there is really nothing being done. You have a situation where the state government is in gridlock. The governor doesn't seem to know what to do, but the state is declining. At a time when also California is declining, tremendous out-migration from California, and the states that are doing well are almost all the red states.
That's right. No, you're right. I mean, Florida, Texas, lots of others. There's, you know, Texas and Florida get all the publicity, but there's a lot of other states. Oklahoma, for example, Oklahoma is getting a lot of traffic from people all around. So it's one of those things. Let me begin, though, with a story that came out here in the last few days. You know, we've heard about these campus protests and the fact that many of the protesters are not even students. And Monica Showalter over at the American Thinker had this great summary of information that we have that some of these protest leaders are actually being trained in Cuba to, I guess, create problems up here, Bill. I'm not surprised that this is happening, but I hope the administration takes this kind of intervention seriously, Bill.
I don't think they do. I think the people in charge of American foreign policy, which are the Obama people, if you look at the those involved in foreign policy, they are all from the Obama administration. I think their attitude is Obama's attitude. We're a defective country, and these people are just trying to correct the defects, and they sometimes go a little too far. But I have not seen, on the part of this administration, a sense of urgency. I don't think the president has delivered a proper speech to the American people. I don't recall him actually making any speeches at night, which is usually where when the president addresses the nation on a serious subject from the Oval Office. He may have made a speech somewhere else. I think he did make a speech somewhere else last week on the subject of the demonstrations, but not a particularly strong one. There's no sense that the administration really cares that much. I think, frankly, many of them privately probably agree with the demonstrations.
Yeah. Well, I would think that another president, let's say a fellow named Trump or a fellow named Reagan or Bush, I think would have confronted this situation totally different.
Oh, yes.
Would have read Riot Act to Cuba and said, you cannot do this, if you're going to be training these people, we're not going to let them back, which it raises another question, Bill. How do these people even get into the United States? The whole thing it's chaotic. I don't know how else to explain it, Bill.
Well, it's completely chaotic, and the fact of the matter is that a number of the people doing the illegal parts of the demonstrations have been arrested, and certainly they're being interrogated by someone here in New York by the NYPD, and yet we hear nothing about them, and the press doesn't seem terribly interested. I mean, if they are coming from other countries, the American people have a right to know, and they have a right to know whether they came here legally or not, probably not. But the press is not asking very many questions, especially now that the semester is over. They expect the demonstrations to go down for a while until the Democratic National Convention in July. We're not going to get answers unless we ask questions. I want to know who they are. I want to know, as you do, who's financing them. There have been several articles, speculative articles, on who was financing them, and it's the usual crowd. Soros crowd, the George Soros crowd, the people from the Tides Foundation, that's been another group, speculatively, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, which is pro-Arab, that's another one. One writer I read said, you can tell that this is organized and you can tell that it is part of a larger movement by the fact that the slogans are very familiar. How many kids did you kill today? It's from the Vietnam War. You could basically say it's the hard left. And that hard left is made up of a number of different groups, a number of different interests. It is also some very, very wealthy people who have joined this kind of wealthy people for a socialism racket that goes on all the time. And the question is, will these people continue to send money to something that is regarded by most Americans as sinister and something that is probably not doing any good for their cause? I don't know. We don't know unless we're going to have questions asked and answered, and that means the press has got to be much more active.
That's right. Another interesting thing, Bill, is that you've had these graduation ceremonies. Some of them, there was one here in Texas where nothing happened. At the University of Texas, nothing happened. But a couple of others where some students have walked out. But if you look at the numbers relative to the numbers, the number of students who are graduating, it's a very small group of people.
Yes, it is.
And, most of the students would like to sit back and enjoy their graduation. Obviously, in many cases, their families that are there. It's a moment of, I saw a story of a mother who was crying saying, this is our first, the first college graduate in our family, So
yes.
Moments like that. And so it seems like, these supporters have absolutely very little support, not only in the population in general, Bill, but even among their fellow students. I mean, they're not, whatever they're doing is not supported by their fellow students. And then you have these ridiculous hunger strikes where, you got some kids who could probably use the hunger strike because they're pretty fat. But I mean, I'm just saying that they're not winning public opinion, but they sure get a lot of publicity, Bill.
Well, they do, because television magnifies everything. There was that girl who was interviewed from Princeton who got, you probably saw it, it's gone viral. She got up to a microphone and said, "We're starving. We're not healthy. We're starving. I can't stand the starvation anymore." And somebody suggested to her, "Well, why don't you go eat something?" And she said, "I'm on a hunger strike." It's like a comedy show. You can end the hunger by simply ending the hunger strike. She said, "But that's not my politics." I mean, the immaturity of some of these kids is remarkable. They're more like children than like adults.
Yeah, well, there was another interesting, funny incident, too, in Colombia, where a young woman student was talking about, somebody was asking her about, well, why is it that revolutionaries need food? I mean, we always thought that revolutionaries had to go through a little hunger, isn't that part of being a revolutionary? And she said something, well, the students here have paid for the meal pass at the university. The university owes us a meal because we paid, for the meal pass. And, I mean, these people are not good at anything, including being revolutionaries, Bill.
They are revolutionaries in a Mercedes. They will drive their Mercedes to the revolution. It's if it were not so serious because of the ineptitude of many college administrations, it would be funny. It would be a comedy act. And in fact, Saturday Night Live has been doing a comedy about it, and not getting any negative backlash. The point has been made by some people. They say, well, this is really no different than the revolt about the Vietnam War and the demonstrations about the Vietnam War. It's completely different. During the Vietnam War revolt, we had 500,000 American troops fighting in Vietnam, and Americans were fighting and dying. Now we are not actually militarily involved, in other words, with ground troops, anywhere, and they're demonstrating. They suddenly are concerned about Gaza. Most of them probably don't even know where Gaza is, or maybe they think it's a restaurant somewhere. But suddenly this cause has come to life, and it came to life very quickly, and you wonder how many of them really are interested in the Palestinian cause, or how many of this was done by outside agitators.
I think it's outside agitators, Bill, who sort of had everything ready to go. It's a little similar to the George Floyd thing when that happened. I mean, back then you had people waiting for something like that to get going. And I feel that it's the same thing here. I think these agitators have just been waiting for the right moment, and it came for them in the case of Gaza. But I thought it was interesting in Florida. They were blocking a bridge, and that didn't go very well because they were arrested quickly. And so, it seems like some places are acting correctly. They're acting, they're saying, you can march, but don't block streets or bridges. And the states that are enforcing that seem to be having more luck, Bill.
Oh, sure. Well, nobody really wants to go to prison even for a night. And they're afraid their parents might find out. I think that's a big part of it. We'll demonstrate, but we don't want mommy and daddy to find out, because then the checks might stop. That's correct.
Maybe they should go on a real hunger strike, Bill. They should go maybe like for about 20 or 25 days in a real hunger strike, like real people in political prisons. It's funny talking about hunger strikes for a second. Let me just tell you a quick story. There was actually a Cuban in a Cuban political prison who died on a hunger strike.
Yes.
But that is a totally different case than these spoiled kids, Bill.
Yes, it certainly is. And there are people who get involved in demonstrations. Back in the 1960s, We had students participating in big demonstrations. They would go to Washington in March. I didn't agree with them, but as long as they didn't break the law, you know, they have freedom of speech. It was unfair. It was unfair to Lyndon Johnson. But the chant we heard during the Vietnam was, "Hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?" We're hearing that same chant today. How many kids did you kill today? Being asked of President Biden, and you have to believe there's some link in some of the organizations, that some of the organizations involved might be descendants of the same organizations who were picketing in the 1960s, not because they cared about a war, but because they didn't want us to win it.
Right. Yeah, well, that was the situation back then. I didn't care a lot for the protests back then, Bill.
No.
But I'm angrier with the ones now, because the ones back then, you could argue that, like you indicated, you know, 500,000 troops. At one point, we were losing 100 soldiers a week. People forget that about that war. In fact, I remember the 10 o'clock news back then. There was always a story about a local soldier who was killed. You know, they would put his picture and tell you a little bit about it. So, I mean, there was certainly a lot more on the line, I felt, back then than there is now. I mean, most of these students, they have never served in the military. They're basically, the impression I get, Bill, is that a lot of them are just spoiled kids who come from the rich part of town. That's the impression I get, Bill.
I get that same impression, and as you said, they were ready to go. I mean, I've never seen on the second day of a war, which is when this began, the day after Hamas attacked Israel, I've never seen so many brand-new Palestinian flags. I mean, those are not usually seen much around the United States, but they certainly have them in considerable abundance and with the chants, and they were ready to go. And I want to know why they were ready to go and what was missed by our news media, which may have missed it intentionally, or by the FBI. And the fact that they were centered on American college campuses, where you have a lot of people ready to be organized, we don't know enough about it. And you know, again, we're talking about a press that tends to be left wing, and probably was somewhat sympathetic to the marchers, and a population that, you know, it didn't affect most of the population. It affected the universities. And, of course, for people with kids in the universities, they were outraged. But the administration really didn't give them much backing. It really didn't. And, I mean, I would have loved to have seen the president of the United States go to a college and be offered the opportunity to speak to the American people from that college. I mean, it took – how many days did it take Biden to finally even say anything about these demonstrations? It took several weeks. And then what he said was basically boilerplate stuff.
Right. No, I think it was 2 weeks, actually, before he even said anything. And then he just read a statement and walked away. I personally would have advised the president to go down in person to one of the colleges – and make a speech right at the college. You know, that's what Reagan did back in the late 60s in one of the California universities. He actually went down, and I think he should have told the students, you know, I'm going to personally guarantee that every Jewish American can enter the university, and if that means that I have to federalize the National Guard, I will. I mean, he's got the authority to do that. It's
that's
not like
exactly
he's
right.
You know, breaching the Constitution. He does have a responsibility for maintaining law and order, and there wasn't a lot of that in these universities. But if I may ask you one more question about the situation with universities before we talk about Israel, what is the status of the president of Columbia University? I mean, she may be a victim of all of this. I don't know. But who's going to be responsible for what happened in that college? I mean, some universities have either – I've seen some of them resign, some university presidents. But with Columbia, I have not seen that, Bill. I mean, who's responsible for canceling the graduation, for example?
I think that was probably a decision made by the Board of Trustees, probably because they have information that we don't have. Here again, a failure by the press. You cancel the graduation when there is believable information that there could be a dangerous incident. Well, we don't know what that is. I mean, it has not been told to us. I suspect that the university believed that the demonstrators would wreck the graduation and it would be a very bad look for Columbia, because the only thing you can do in a situation like that is to call in the police. They don't have a guard force large enough to control a big demonstration, even if the demonstration is illegal. So you put yourself in the position of Columbia University. On graduation day, we will be calling the police. And I think they felt things could get out of control. You have many, many thousands of guests. That area where the Columbia graduation is held is the graduation of all the schools together. It is a large area. A very large area. I'm a Columbia guy myself. So I think they were afraid there would be a very bad scene. Now, we know that the night that the Hamilton Hall was taken, which is the only building that the Crusaders, if you want to call them that, took over, that the Board of Trustees came en masse to Columbia, and they stayed the entire night and apparently were very much in charge of what decisions were being made. The president of the university is a creature of the Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees hires the president and can dismiss the president. There's no indication now that they want to dismiss her. I think they feel they may be giving the demonstrators a cause, and there's no indication that she wants to resign. She is very weak. Even in her statements, they're so weak that you wish for a little bit of steel in them, and that we haven't had. So I don't know what the ultimate will be. She is an Arab American, which many people don't realize. That should not make any difference. All we care about is how well she does the job. But she really hasn't done the job very well. There has not been that sense of authority and that sense that I am in charge of the university and you will follow the rules, which is what she should have said. And I don't know what her future is.
Yeah, that's interesting. In contrast to that other acting president down in one of the Carolinas, who came out very strongly in support of the American flag and so on. So anyway,
well,
just a fascinating situation. This is the one in North or South Carolina. I think it was North Carolina.
I think it was UNC. And he is the acting chancellor. He's the acting
chancellor. Right, the acting chancellor who came out very strongly.
And you know who he is.
You told me last week he was Cokie Roberts' son, right?
Cokie Roberts' son, and his father was the major figure in the House of Representatives. And now the question is whether they make him permanent chancellor. The people of the state want him as permanent chancellor. He was really their champion, but I'm not so sure the faculty will go along. I don't know if they have any power in it, but they can have a demonstration. So I don't know what his future is going to be, but I hope they make him the permanent chancellor.
Well, he certainly did a good job, I think, in at least defending the flag, which I think a few people appreciate that, given that some of these schools are putting up foreign flags, like I think
in
some of these other places. It's kind of nice to see somebody defending the flag for a change. But let me go to another big controversy this week. President Biden goes on CNN and makes a statement about Israel that has everybody upset. I get the feeling that he was trying to split, maybe not when he said that, but when they came back later explaining what he meant, I kind of get the feeling they're trying to spill or split the baby, and they're ending up not pleasing anybody. Nobody's happy. When you have to come back and explain yourself that many times, nobody's happy, Bill.
That's exactly right. He is trying to split the baby. On the one hand, he wanted to express some concern over Israel. He is opposed to the Israeli operation, which itself is kind of annoying because the Israeli operation is going after Hamas and destroying Hamas, and we should be all in favor of that. We should want Hamas completely gone out of Gaza. And he says, well, we're in favor of that too, but we don't like the way it's being done. And as a result, I'm going to withhold some arms. And what made people angry was Israel is a very close ally of the United States. That is the kind of discussion you have privately. You don't make a public announcement. And he humiliated an ally who was at war, fighting in a way our war. And I think there was a feeling, this is just a bad look. It's not the way we do things. But it is the way he did things, and the Secretary of State added his little punch to it by making an outrageous statement over the weekend saying that he thinks Israel ought to get out of Gaza. Well, for goodness sake, Gaza attacked them, and they're trying to solve the problem. The point has been made. It's not original with me. All over the world, other countries are watching this. And they're saying, what kind of an ally is the United States in a pinch? I mean, here they are knifing their own ally in the back, and it's one of their closest allies. What would they do to us? And maybe we shouldn't get too close to this country called the United States. We're losing as a result of this.
Oh, absolutely. But I think you're right. I think that this is a discussion they should have had in private. But I have to give Israel here the benefit of the doubt. And that is based on how they've behaved in other operations over the years, Bill. They've always been very concerned about civilians. But at the same time, when you put civilians in front of the door, I mean, you could do your best to avoid them, but there will be, unfortunately, some civilians killed. And, it's a little bit like, I guess, during a war, stuff like that happens. But I feel over the years that Israel has always gone out of its way to avoid mass casualties. They certainly
it has.
I mean, they could have ended this thing. I mean, they could have ended this a lot sooner, Bill. I mean, they could have gone in and literally blown up the whole place and killed thousands of civilians, and they would have ended Hamas. So they're being very careful in how they do it, but they don't get any credit from this administration. I think the administration ought to be publicly supporting Israel. And then, of course, in private, you can say whatever you want to say. But my gosh, I think who was it? Was it the Secretary of State who said that they were not legitimate or not following international law? Did he say
well,
like that, Bill?
The State Department issued a statement. First of all, the timing of it was terrible. Right after we threaten the Israelis with withholding arms, the State Department comes out with a statement saying that we have studied the Israeli record in Gaza, and one can believe that they are acting illegitimately, even though we do not have documentation specifically, but one could believe it. That's a terrible thing to say. I mean, saying, in effect, we really have no evidence, but one can believe it if one wishes. It was just really coming from the anti-Israel pro-Hamas wing of the State Department, which is a good part of the State Department. The State Department has never been too keen on Israel. But it just the kind of a thing you say about an ally, a close ally. And again, other countries around the world are going to say, what kind of an ally is the United States? In a pinch, they will just pull the plug and run away. And of course, we've done it before. We did it in Afghanistan, where we left plenty of pro-American people behind, not caring a bit about them, that they had fought on our side. We did it in Vietnam with the same thing. We left plenty of pro-American fighters behind. We don't have that great a record as an ally when the chips are down, and it's going to hurt. It's already hurting us. I remember during the Vietnam War, at the end of the Vietnam War, somebody said in public life, the worst thing you can be in this world is an ally of the United States. And there was that belief that we had cut and run, left our Vietnamese friends behind, and that they had fought side by side with us. So I think we have some work to do internationally.
Yeah, but this confusion where you have the State Department making a statement like that, and then you have the White House, cleaning up after the president, then you've got the Secretary of State saying this. I mean, does that give you the impression that this is that President Biden is in charge of anything? You kind of get the feeling that, I mean, he's not the guy. I mean, something is missing there, Bill. I mean,
yes.
This kind of chaos. I mean, something's missing in that White House, Bill. That's my impression.
Well, what's missing is leadership. you don't get the feeling that Obama, I'm sorry, that Biden is really in charge. I get the feeling it's the Obama group. And I get the feeling that they've been in charge of foreign policy for a long time. If you look at all the appointees in foreign policy, they are all from the Obama administration. And the policy is very much from the Obama administration. People cannot believe that we are helping Iran with its economy, that we are making it possible for them to get into their treasury billions of dollars at the same time that they are openly at war with the West. And I mean, I've never heard of anything like that. You don't help an enemy. You try to hurt the enemy and help your friends. But I think it is so clear that the people in charge of the foreign policy of the United States are people who actually basically are pro-Iran. They may not love the government of Iran, but they want to replace Israel with Iran as our closest ally in the Middle East. How do you do that with a country that openly wants to destroy you? I mean, Iran refers to Israel as the little Satan, but they refer to the United States as the big Satan and the great Satan. And yet there are people, there is an Iranian lobby in Washington. It gets no attention from the press, which is an outrageous comment on the role of the press here. But it is obvious. We have this case of our ambassador, Malley, who was ambassador in dealings with Iran, and he is now he has been removed from his position on security grounds. There is a grave suspicion that he has been doing improper things in Iran's favor. And yet you don't hear that story on television news at all. That's a major story. But I'm afraid what we have here is an absolute act of negligence by the American press.
Yes. Well, the other big issue, of course, this last week is that trial in New York and then that rally in New Jersey. And, you know, more and more people, including this fellow Zakaria or whatever his name is from CNN.
Yes.
Yeah, I cannot remember his name, but I know his face. I cannot remember his name, but he came out and pretty much said that this is a political persecution. I mean, I think he was pretty clear on that. But it seems like, Bill, the more they attack President Trump, the more he gains. I've never seen anything like that.
I think the American people, as usual, are ahead of the politicians. And they have figured out that this whole thing is a political setup. It is designed to make it impossible for Donald Trump to run for president. Hello?
Well, but they're not – I mean, you're right about that. I think you're right. I think people have picked up on that. But it's not working for the Democrats. I mean, I think that there has to be some concern within the Democrat Party that they're going too far – that they're not helping their cause. I mean, if I was a Democrat, I'd be calling the judge, and I'd be saying, Judge, you got to figure out how to end this thing. This is not helping us, Judge.
Well, you know, I think that there is a solution to it. Some of the charges against Trump are local charges brought by, for example, this ridiculous DA in Manhattan, who is nothing more than a left-wing politician financed by George Soros. But some of them are federal charges. And I think that Biden would do himself a great deal of good saying these trials are hurting the country. They are hurting the presidency. I'm going to give a former president, Trump, a full pardon for any charges against him and let him run for president. Biden would come out as a statesman, as a true patriot, as a man who wants to see a true contest for president, and he would gain a great deal by, in effect, forcing Trump to defend himself publicly and not go through this ridiculous legal process, which looks more of a farce every day. I think that's what Biden should do, and it may help him get reelected.
Well, I think so, because it would force then Trump to talk about issues, and then we can have a campaign based on issues. I also think, Bill, you were talking about New York earlier in our conversation about the problems New York is having. I think the biggest loser out of all of this is New York, the state of New York.
Yes,
that
sure.
Because you know, these cases whether it's this one or the other one about, you know, the case of the fraud case, you know, where nobody was defrauded, and then the woman who's claiming that 30 years ago he raped her. These cases are making the New York judicial system look like a banana republic. And that's not helpful for a state that has to attract investment, or a state like New York that has such an international reputation. I mean, New York had always been, you know, the financial center of the country. Well, how can you have a financial center with this kind of a judicial system built?
Well, that's, I think New York looks ridiculous. I mean, it is embarrassing to us. It looks like a little third world country. And that is the image. You know, New York today is the largest out-migration state in the United States. More people leave New York than any other state. And the state is, of course, losing money on that. We have a mayor in New York who is a basically decent man, but who is paralyzed because he doesn't have the power of spending money really the way he wants to do it. It's the state legislature that controls that. We have a city council in New York, which is hard left, very far to the left. They enjoy what's going on. And we have a state legislature under complete Democratic control, which will not help New York City at all. They have no problem with New York City being in trouble as long as the political left wins. That's their real typical left-wing ideologists.
But I agree with that. I agree with that, Bill, but by hurting or allowing New York City to collapse like this, I mean, I'm talking about the judicial system, they're hurting New York because the money comes into New York. It just doesn't come into New York City. I mean, there's this fellow, I think his name is Kevin O'Leary, who shows up in many of these analysis programs, and he goes all over the world, you know, looking for money to bring to the United States. And he's basically saying, I'm not recommending to any of my clients to put money in New York, because this is not a stable judicial system. I also have to think, Bill, that if you're a Republican, a businessman, somebody with a lot of money, and you're watching this, you know, you're looking down the road and you're saying they can do the same thing to me that they're doing
to
Trump. So I'm going to get the heck out. So I think, you know, again, not to repeat myself, but I think the biggest loser here is the state of New York. And that's really sad, I think, Bill.
It's very sad because it affects so many industries in New York. It affects the tourist industry. You have so many restaurants and other businesses shutting down. You have these locked doors. You have a lot of local businesses shutting down and not reopening. You have businesses, major corporations, either leaving New York or not expanding in New York, The whole spirit of New York seems to be lost. I mean, I think the sports teams are doing pretty well, but they'll get to that also. But the city is it is not a pleasure to visit. You have a very high crime rate, a very high rate of local crime, the kind of crime that affects people, that affects school children going to and from school, and you have nothing on the other side. There's nothing positive happening in New York. They're looking for new ways to raise money, which means they may raise taxes, which is exactly what you don't do in a financial emergency, but they may have to, and the state legislature may force it on the mayor. So it's a city in trouble with no way out.
Right. And the last thing that a city in trouble needs to do is to dig the hole even deeper, as they're doing with these trials. I mean, these trials are really hurting the reputation
of
New York as the financial capital of the world. I mean, I hear that there are lots of empty buildings in Manhattan, office buildings, and people are just, you know, they're looking at New York and they're saying, why are you doing this to yourself? It's almost like in the name of destroying Trump, they're willing to destroy themselves. I've never seen anything like this, Bill, at least not in the United States. I mean, we've seen this in banana republics, for sure.
That's right. This has never happened in American history. We've never had a president indicted like a former president indicted. Our attitude in American history has been live and let live. presidents leave office. There may be some suspicions about them, but we basically say, go home and shut up. And that's
right.
What most of them do. The one who hasn't has been Barack Obama, who has a mansion in Washington. I mean, usually they leave Washington, they get out of Washington, and they let the new president govern. But I'm afraid, Mr. Obama, this is just a theory of mine. I do not have specific proof, but I just have a gut feeling that he is the man really in charge.
I would not be surprised at that at all. I think he is, absolutely. If he's not in charge, they're certainly running the show like he would have been if this was his third term. I mean,
yes, exactly.
I mean, certainly the foreign policy end of it is very similar. Well, Bill, as always, thank you so much for your time, and have a wonderful week. Hopefully the next time we chat, this case in New York will be finally settled and New York can get back to encouraging investment and taking care of the taxpayers, Bill.
I hope so, too, but I am not that optimistic.
No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Well, have a great day, Bill, and thank you again for joining us, and thank you for the great work you do with Urgent Agenda.
Well, thank you, Silvio. I look forward to our next call.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, editor of Urgent Agenda. You know what Bill was saying there about New York and what we were talking about New York, that's the part that hurts me the most, to see a great city, a great state. The city of New York has always been the place you think about when you think about investments and you think about financial capital of the United States. And to see it like this, it just makes me, I don't know, it just makes me angry. If I lived in New York, I would be even more angry than I am. But then I talk to people in New York and they're pretty angry. So I guess I'm not the only one. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we will talk to you later.